It's quite hard to say what the end game is entirely. In many ways, the assault also probably surprised them as much as it did the Israelis. And right now, I think they're trying to, it seems like they're trying to figure out what kind of bargaining chips they have in order to gain certain new kinds of agreements with the Israeli authorities, with the aid potentially of Arab states to try to mediate some kind of ceasefire that helps to meet certain Hamas demands. And they've been quite explicit about some of the things that they're seeking, which are long-standing issues that have existed even before this far-right government, including the issue of release of Palestinian prisoners, including provocations and aggressions around Jerusalem, especially around the holy sites, and also, of course, the what's been happening in the West Bank under the Israeli occupation and settler violence. So these are kind of the big structural demands that are still at play, and it seems that Hamas is now trying to use tactically basically what they have right now to kind of turn the tables. But this,
We have
because
five
we're still in the eye of the
seconds.
storm,
You're listening to
because we're not, because
KBOO
we're not.
Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operation and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communication Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Policy and Governance Committee meets on the third Tuesday of March, June, September, and December at 6 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if the meeting is being held.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud media sponsor of the Día de los Muertos celebration on Wednesday, November 1st, from 12 to 10 p.m. at The Red on Salmon Street in Portland. Día de los Muertos is an ancient celebration originating from the indigenous people of Mexico. Festivities will include altar creation, muertos face painting, sugar skull decorating, traditional Mexican food, and live musical performances. Again, that's the Día de los Muertos celebration on Wednesday, November 1st, from 12 to 10 p.m. at The Red on Salmon Street, 831 Southeast Salmon Street in Portland.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on this fall membership drive edition of the KBOO Evening News, Portland swears in a new police chief. Far-right candidates vie for seats on school boards in Washington. And eclipse viewers in Oregon may miss the astronomical sight due to cloud cover. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Thursday, October 12, 2023. KBOO is currently in our fall membership drive, and we would love to urge you to become a member by going online to kboo.fm/give. I'm Michelle Coppola. Portland's new police chief, Bob Day, was sworn in on Wednesday morning. This follows a surprise announcement on September 20th that former police chief Chuck Lavelle would step down after 3 years. Chief Day retired as a deputy chief in 2019 and will serve as interim police chief until the next mayor is elected and takes office in January 2025. Day notably oversaw the training program in 2018 when the police bureau used an anti-protester right-wing meme in training materials. The police bureau is in transition, so Day will have a lot on his plate. Portland cops are now partnering with state police to tackle the city's fentanyl crisis. They're also finishing their 60-day body camera pilot program and will be under the scrutiny of a new civilian-run police oversight board that can discipline and fire police officers. Candidates with extreme views on LGBTQ rights and race are running for school board seats across Washington state. Opponents worry they could threaten the safety of students. Eric Tegedoff has more on that story.
Extreme candidates are running for school board across Washington state. If they win, opponents say they could threaten the safety of some students. The far-right group Moms for Liberty has 10 chapters in Washington and has been influential in school board races across the country. Amy Nyland with the Ferndale Education Association says the candidates running in her district are aligned with Moms for Liberty, although there isn't a local chapter. She says these candidates could change policies so that teachers aren't allowed to be safe and affirming with LGBTQ students.
Having leadership that is affirming for LGBTQ students saves lives.
Moms for Liberty members have pushed policies including eliminating sex education and banning books that cover LGBTQ topics. Candidates with similar views are running across the state, including in Central Valley, Edmonds, and Medicine Valley. Supporters of these candidates say they are backing parents' rights in schools. Far-right groups have also pushed back against diversity, equity, and inclusion in schools, including education about slavery and racism. Nyland says community members have expressed their support for educators and academic freedom.
When we know we're trusted with making all of our students seen and heard and part of the curriculum, and we can teach true history, it makes a huge difference for all of the students in our classroom.
Off-year elections often have lower voter turnout than others, and Nyland is worried extreme candidates could use this and hot-button issues to their advantage this year. However, she also says she senses a lot of potential right now for students and teachers to make a positive difference in their communities.
We need leaders who are prepared to do that, and I'm really glad that we're fortunate in Ferndale to have those. And I hope that other places will see that too, that we can offer people a really positive, strong alternative to these divisive choices.
For Washington News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
Commercial airline flights are landing in Salem for the first time in 15 years. Delta stopped service to Salem during the 2008 financial crisis when fuel prices spiked. Now, the ultra-low-cost carrier Avelo will offer service to Las Vegas and Burbank, with potential expansions to the Bay Area and Phoenix in the future. The airport had to make updates and adjustments before passenger flights could resume, like reinforcing the floor so they could bring in heavier, more sensitive security equipment. The airport serves two counties and roughly 28 cities. They estimate they'll serve 750,000 people a year. The airport pitches itself as a Portland South and says it's a matter of convenience for travelers who don't want to fly out of Portland or Eugene. The Oregon Zoo's female Amur tiger, Bernadette, will be moving to Minnesota later this month. The 7-year-old cat will see Oregon visitors for the last time on Sunday, October 15th. Then she'll be moved to the Como Park Zoo and Conservatory in St. Paul. Why the move? The zoo says it's part of the species survival plan. Bernadette's subspecies, Amur tigers, are at serious risk of extinction because of poaching, habitat loss, and lack of genetic variation. An estimated 500 of these tigers remain in their native habitat in southeast Russia. The Oregon Zoo doesn't have enough space for Bernadette to raise cubs, but the St. Paul Zoo does. After Bernadette leaves, the Oregon Zoo will welcome two young male tigers later this year. House Republicans nominate Representative Steve Scalise as next House Speaker if he can get the votes. A number of Americans missing in Israel may be hostages. And North Carolina Democrats sue over restrictive new voting laws. With more on those stories, it's Catherine Carley with 2023 Talks.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we are following our democracy in historic times.
We have a lot of work to do, not just in the House for the people of this country, but we see how dangerous of a world it is and how things can change so quickly.
Republican Steve Scalise of Louisiana won the nomination to be the next speaker, but it's unclear if he has the near-perfect unity he'd need in the caucus. The majority leader beat fellow hardline conservative Jim Jordan of Ohio in a secret ballot yesterday. Jordan says he'll back Scalise, though some Jordan supporters say they won't. Lawmakers haven't scheduled an open floor vote. A signed Scalise might still lack support, but Representative Matt Gaetz of Florida says Scalise would be a monumental upgrade to former Speaker Kevin McCarthy.
Long live Speaker Scalise.
Do you think he has the votes on the floor?
I sure hope so. We'll see some democracy in action.
Scalise says his first order of business would be to pass a bipartisan resolution supporting Israel. At least 22 Americans have been killed there and 17 remain missing. National Security Council spokesman John Kirby says some are likely held by Hamas.
I think we all need to steel ourselves for the very distinct possibility that these numbers will keep increasing and that we may, in fact, find out that more Americans are part of the hostage pool.
President Joe Biden met with Jewish leaders at the White House and says the attacks in Israel raise painful memories and scars left by a millennium of anti-Semitism. North Carolina's GOP-controlled legislature has overridden vetoes by Democratic Governor Roy Cooper to pass laws restricting ballot access. The new rules make mail-in and early voting harder while easing limits on partisan poll watchers. Republicans say they're rebuilding confidence in elections, but Cooper says the real aim is to intimidate people of color and college students.
They know that you can change the outcome of elections, so they're making it harder for you to vote, hoping that you won't bother.
Democrats are filing multiple lawsuits. The Supreme Court's conservative majority is considering whether South Carolina's congressional map was illegally gerrymandered by race. A lower court ordered one district redrawn after finding Republicans moved black voters into another district to make the seat safer for Representative Nancy Mace. Democrat Michael Moore is running against Mace.
It's an opportunity for us in South Carolina to underscore our commitment to the integrity of our institutions, of democracy, and simply to do the right thing here.
Republicans say they ignored race when drawing the district, but did consider party, which is legal. Democrats in Virginia are asking for action by the Justice Department. They say Republican Governor Glenn Youngkin's administration violated the Voting Rights Act by scrubbing eligible voters from the rolls. The state acknowledged it had removed more than 10,000 names without notice, many for minor probation violations. I'm Catherine Carley for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
An Arizona initiative could change the state's right-to-work laws. Proponents of the amendment to Arizona's constitution say it boils down to strengthening unions and the benefits they are able to negotiate. Alex Gonzalez reports.
A grassroots organization in Arizona is pushing to remove the state's right-to-work statute in an attempt to strengthen unionization. Arizona Works Together says the state's right-to-work laws make achieving things like better pay and benefits more challenging. The group adds that average workers in right-to-work states earn about $10,000 less than in non-right-to-work states each year. Jennifer Scherer with the Economic Policy Institute says by looking at trends, workers across the country are increasingly looking to their right to organize and collectively bargain as a vehicle to address what she calls really deep inequalities in our economy.
The initiative and the discussion underway in a number of states about making sure every worker has full access to those rights is the origin of the initiative you're seeing in Arizona.
Scherer adds that because of Arizona's right-to-work laws, unions have been what she deems actively suppressed. The initiative being pushed by Arizona Works Together is currently working to get close to 400,000 signatures by next summer to get the measure on the general election ballot in November of 2024. Business leaders are expected to oppose the measure and argue it could be damaging to overall competitiveness in the Grand Canyon state. Scherer says collective bargaining rights are popular among workers across political ideologies. She adds 9 out of 10 young workers approve and are interested in unionization. Scherer says across the country, workers are wanting to improve their working conditions and the compensation they receive. Earlier this year, Michigan repealed its right-to-work law. Scherer contends people around the country are wanting to ensure a more fair economy.
If you live in Arizona versus, you know, you drive a little bit west and live in California, it's almost like you're in a different economy as a worker because in California, you have full bargaining rights.
Scherer adds that various factors, including major strikes currently happening around the country, have led to more of an awareness relating to labor laws and union organizing. For Arizona News Connection, I'm Alex Gonzalez.
Efforts are being made in Alabama to mitigate the effects of drought. 5 counties there have been declared secretarial disaster counties by the Federal Secretary of Agriculture. The drought is affecting cotton crops and cattle producers in the state. Shantia Hudson has more.
Amid worsening drought conditions in Alabama, farmers in the state now have access to vital resources to help combat the challenges they are facing. In the past several weeks, the lack of rain has accelerated conditions in the central and southern parts of the state. The Alabama Department of Agriculture's Deputy Commissioner Hassie Brooks says it's getting harder for farmers to produce and prepare for the rest of the year.
This does put a put a strain on our producers, particularly our cattle producers who are looking to plant winter grazing. And then also, too, the late drought has definitely impacted the cotton crop.
Efforts are being made in Alabama to mitigate the effects of the drought. Five counties in the state have been declared secretarial disaster counties by the Secretary of Agriculture. Brooks says farmers in Baldwin, Conecuh, Escambia, Mobile, and Monroe counties can now access resources available for recovery needs.
They can contact, you know, their local farm service agency office to inquire about any type of drought eligibility for programs. And not only in those counties that are considered primary counties, but the counties that adjoin those.
Butler, Clark, Covington, Washington, and Wilcox counties are listed as contiguous counties that also can receive recovery assistance. Brooks says additional resources are also available to farmers on the Alabama Department of Agriculture and Industry's website. One of those resources is a listing service aimed at helping livestock producers find hay for purchase. For Alabama News Service, I'm Shantia Hudson.
You're listening to a fall membership drive edition of the KBOO Evening News. Our goal is to raise $55,000 by the end of October. We'd like to remind you that you can renew your KBOO membership or become a member at any time during this program by going online to kboo.fm/give. Stay tuned after this newscast for the Global Citizen International Digest with Portland State Professor Emeritus Mel Gertoff. At 6, it's Rose City Native Radio. Then at 7, American Indian Airwaves. Your weather forecast will be cloudy tonight with an overnight low of 52. Tomorrow, those clouds continue, a little chance of rain, and a high of 66. Today in history, in 1968, Equatorial Guinea becomes independent from Spain. The quote of the day is from British occultist and mystic Aleister Crowley, who said, quote, "Intolerance is evidence of impotence." First Lady Jill Biden and Interior Secretary Deb Haaland visited Menominee tribal members in Wisconsin in support of Joe Biden's re-election campaign. With that story and more, it's Jill Freitas with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Jill Freitas from KMBA in Anchorage, Alaska, filling in for Antonia Gonzalez. First Lady Jill Biden and Interior Secretary Deb Haaland are the latest high-profile Democrats to visit Wisconsin in support of re-electing President Joe Biden next year. Chuck Kornbach reports on a trip aimed at reinforcing Native American support for the president.
The First Lady and the Interior Secretary spent about 3 hours touring a Menominee-owned sawmill, a tribal college garden where sustainable agriculture is taught, and speaking at a Native Women's Empowerment Summit. First Lady Biden told the conference that President Joe Biden has invested millions of federal dollars to help tribes.
Joe and I stand with you and all of Indian Country as we build a brighter future together.
Interior Secretary Haaland spoke about creating partnerships between the Bureau of Indian Affairs and philanthropic groups.
I am excited that as one of the first partnerships, the Bureau of Indian Education is working with the Trust for Public Lands to build 9 new schoolyards in tribal communities. That includes a new schoolyard at the Menominee Tribal School right here.
Haaland and Biden were greeted warmly. Tribal member Marsha Utella says the Biden administration is moving in the right direction. But Utella says Menominee County, which overlaps the reservation, often ranks as the least healthy of Wisconsin's 72 counties and has the highest poverty rate.
I've lived through the results of being the 72, you know, out of 72. There's still a lot that needs to be done.
The overwhelming Menominee County vote for Joe Biden in the 2020 presidential election is one of the reasons he narrowly carried Wisconsin. Now the Biden family is hoping it has earned tribal members' continued support. For National Native News, I'm Chuck Quernbach.
Researchers at the University of New Mexico have found that COVID-19 hit American Indian and Alaska Native patients hard, even inside the university's hospital. Emma Vandernindy of the Mountain West Newsboro reports.
The researchers met with around 500 patients admitted from 2020 to 2021. They found a disproportionate number of indigenous individuals were admitted both in and outside of the ICU, with more than half developing severe cases. They also would stay twice as long at the hospital and were more likely to be put on a ventilator. DJ Perkins is the director of the university's Center for Global Health. He says even though this group had low rates of other diseases that could exacerbate the virus, they still faced a high risk.
The strongest predictor of severe disease, and it was about threefold higher, was self-identified as American Indian, Alaska Native.
Some causes behind these numbers could be lack of access to healthcare facilities and poor living conditions created by forced government relocation to reservations. Perkins says one way to turn the numbers around is making sure booster shots and testing sites are more available. For National Native News, I'm Emma Vandenindy.
I'm Jill Freitas.
October is National Eczema Awareness Month. It's a skin disease for which there is currently no cure. It's estimated that 31.6 million Americans have some form of eczema, also called atopic dermatitis. It's an itchy rash that can cause sleep disturbances, absence from work or school, and even psychological effects. Terry D. has more on that story.
October is National Eczema Awareness Month. More than 31 million people in the U.S. have some form of this chronic skin disease, also known as atopic dermatitis. Symptoms include itchy red patches of dry skin that can appear anywhere on the body. Sudden weather changes or exposure to common household items can be irritants that trigger a flare-up. Indianapolis dermatologist Dr. Christopher Obamy advises parents what to do if their child regularly scratches a patch of swollen skin.
So you go to a pediatrician, that's where you start. Most people have a pediatrician already in place. First line of treatment is going to be using a good emollient, using a good moisturizer.
According to the National Eczema Association, the condition is believed to be hereditary. Babies can experience a flare-up within weeks of birth. Obamy points out eczema is bothersome for school-age kids because it can interfere with their sleep, which affects school performance. Research indicates children with atopic dermatitis miss at least 15 school days a year. The cost of treating eczema is steep, from antibiotic creams to corticosteroid pills. Prescription medications can be expensive and are not always covered by insurance. Eczema can also have a psychological impact, as a discolored rash can appear for days or weeks on the face or hands. Although there is no cure, Obamy says new medications are frequently discovered to help manage the disease.
We have a new drug, topical JAK inhibitor, oral medicines that work wonderfully for eczema.
The JAK, or JAK inhibitor drugs, curb inflammation, but they have only been approved for use on eczema since last year. The National Eczema Association estimates the annual economic burden of this skin condition at more than $5 billion, including medical cost and lack of worker productivity. Adults with eczema take, on average, 11 days off per year to treat it. I'm Terry D., Indiana News Service.
October also happens to be Breast Cancer Awareness Month. Medical experts say women are being diagnosed at a younger age, and screenings should start earlier as well to catch it. Eric Tegadoff has more.
October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and health professionals say younger women are increasingly being diagnosed with the cancer. About 1 in 8 women will be diagnosed in her lifetime, but survival rates are high if the cancer is caught early. Dr. Monica Wells with Kaiser Permanente says 50 is a well-known age for people to start getting screened for the cancer.
If you sample individuals, even amongst my patient population, they think about 50 as being the time they need to start getting mammograms. But what we're doing is we're wanting to move the needle on that and have those conversations earlier.
About 1 in 11 new breast cancer cases are diagnosed to women younger than 45. There are more than 3.8 million breast cancer survivors in the United States. Wells says it might be a good idea for some women to start the screening process at age 40.
If we can identify who we can screen earlier and find those early cases, we sort of have a potentially 10-year head start on treating cancer.
When breast cancer is caught at its earliest stage, the 5-year survival rate is 99%. Wells says that's another reason why screening women at a younger age is important.
Early detection, when we find those cancers that are in their earlier stages, opens up a whole spectrum of treatment options that might not be as readily available or maybe more complicated if it's a more advanced cancer.
For Washington News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
As we know well here in the Pacific Northwest, wildfire smoke can infiltrate your home even when the windows are closed. New research says air pollution can be just as bad inside a home, but air filtration can help. Dr. Anthony Leisowitz has more on that story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Leisowitz, and this is Climate Connections. In recent years, wildfire smoke has brought hazy, orange skies to many American cities. Breathing this smoke can be hazardous to your health, so people are encouraged to stay indoors when the air quality is poor. But staying inside may not be enough to keep you safe. Ethan Walker of the University of Montana was part of a team that studied the air quality in 20 Montana homes during the 2022 wildfire season.
Some homes had pretty good air quality indoors throughout the wildfire season, and in others we found that air pollution indoors was nearly as bad or just as bad as it was outside.
Part of the problem is that wildfires often hit during the sweltering summer months, so people without air conditioning open their windows to stay cool.
And so they are forced to make this very difficult choice where heat is often the more acute danger to your health. But then if you're opening your windows for ventilation, then you're exposing yourself to more of this wildfire smoke.
And the researchers found that even with the window shut, some smoke was able to creep into people's homes. So the study shows the importance of access to both air conditioning and air filtration, especially as the climate warms. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To hear more stories like this, visit climateconnections.org.
The visual and storytelling traditions of Latino, Black, Indigenous, and other people of color are being elevated this week as part of the virtual National Film Festival. The Hispanic Access Foundation is hosting the third annual Our Heritage, Our Planet Film Week through Friday. Roz Brown has more.
A film festival created to help close the gap in storytelling for people of color is offering free virtual showings as part of Hispanic Heritage Month. Through Friday, the Hispanic Access Foundation is hosting the third annual Our Heritage, Our Planet Film Week to honor the storytelling traditions of Latino, Black, Indigenous, and other people of color. The foundation's Brenda Gallegos says the festival allows BIPOC communities to contribute their unique perspective on the world around us.
To share their stories, share their experiences, hear their voices, and even hear the traditions, the culture, and heritage coming directly from the communities of color.
Gallegos says too often BIPOC voices are left out or deemed not as valuable on the topics of climate change and environmental justice, when in fact those communities are the most affected. The free virtual films also include performances and discussions with filmmakers, decision makers, and community members on a variety of conservation topics. More information is available at ourheritageourplanet.org. She says the films chosen this year boost the nexus between diverse communities and the lands, nature, waterways, and oceans. For the third festival, Gallego says 5 mini-grants were awarded to BIPOC filmmakers. She says that's helping break down barriers that often prevent talented filmmakers of color from having their work seen by a larger audience.
So there might be language barriers that don't allow for all of that information to get there, cost barriers as well, which is why we provide this free to everyone so that everybody has the access to it.
The festival has billed today, Environmental Justice Day, with films and conversations that explore connections between pollutants and health and how it relates to justice, while tomorrow is Climate Crisis Day with an exploration of ocean conservation. For Texas News Service, I'm Roz Brown.
So are you maybe headed to the coast to see the solar eclipse this weekend? Well, if so, You'll likely be hampered by cloud cover on Saturday morning. There's a weather system moving into the direct line between Albany and Klamath Falls. Meteorologists hope they'll only be feathery cirrus clouds that are higher up, which would be less obstructive. They do recommend that people check the forecast on Friday ahead of the Saturday morning event to get a better idea of where clouds can be expected and where visibility might be best. You're listening to a fall membership drive edition of the KBOO Evening News for Thursday, October 12th, 2023. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories, tips, ideas, what have you, at 971-245-2158. Our producer for tonight's newscast is Althea Billings. Our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Jill Freitas, Catherine Carley, Alex Gonzalez, Shantia Hudson, Eric Tegadoff, and Dr. Anthony Lizowitz. The director of Evening News is the effervescent Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Michelle Coppola. By the way, all of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members, great people like you. KBOO is currently in our fall membership drive, so now is a great time to join us because we can't do it without you. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for the Global Citizen International Digest with Portland State Professor Emeritus Mel Gertoff. Have a great night.
Welcome to the Global Citizen International Digest with Portland State Professor Emeritus Mel Gertoff.